Welcome to the Northern Business Podcast, a regular discussion with people in the north of England who lead businesses, employ people, and have new ideas to help our economy grow. The Northern Business Podcast is produced by Recognition PR, which serves scores of companies in different sectors across the country, some of which occasionally contribute to the podcast. We're kindly sponsored by Virtue Motors PLC, one of the largest automotive retailers in the UK, with a network of dealerships representing some of the world's most popular brands. It also owns the successful commercial vehicle retailer, Vans Direct. I'm Graham Robb, and today I'm presenting with Joss Haviken. Hi, Joss. In the studio, we have Sarah Hollins, founder and director of North Star Communications. And down the line, we've got Becky Hart, who's the regional director of the CBI. Welcome, ladies. We'll talk to you properly in a minute. First, Josh, what about our week in business? It's been a big week, the budget last week and then the aftermath. What were you doing about it?
Yeah, it's definitely been a busy couple of weeks, getting involved with clients in some of the speculation leading up to the budget, putting forward the case of the kind of things that they were wanting to see, the things that they didn't want to see. And then budget day itself. In the office, we got a few pizzas in, sat down, watched it, made some notes. Then we were straight on the phone to clients, putting together some reaction and getting it out there.
And you went for one of these after the budget events where people are briefed. It was very quick. It was like the next morning, wasn't it?
Yeah, next morning, 8 o'clock. There was a couple that Recognition people attended. I was at the one in Darlington. My colleague Robin was up at the one in Newcastle. That was run by Clive Owen. I got the sense that things hadn't really settled in with people. There was still a lot of we're waiting for the finer detail. We've got the document here, but going to have to see some guidance. I think, though, over the weekend, with some of the stuff that was in the Sunday papers and the Sunday programmes, it's settled in a little bit more with people, and there's going to have to be some big changes out there.
Yeah, and I think you're right, over the weekend that was true. People settled in and it really dawned on them what the implications were in terms of cost and profit. And we owe our viewers and listeners a duty of candor, because we can't just talk up things when they aren't worthy of talking up. This firm, our PR firm, lost a few contracts on the Friday after the budget because of cost cutting. But
it does look as though we have won a decent new client.
Yeah,
as well,
so there was a counter. So there were some clients that needed to cut costs because there was almost a sense of panic at the extra costs that they had in their businesses. But then
the flip side is people are looking as well, I think, at maybe outsourcing a little bit more, which is where having a PR company rather than potentially hiring somebody in-house gives them a bit more flexibility and saves them a bit on money as well.
That's right. And other companies wanted to promote their services rather than take a negative view. So swings and roundabouts, the effect on our firm.
Yeah, I have to say, on a personal note, I've done both the Telegraph's online and the Times online calculator, and it came in that I would be £1.50 better off next year. But I have to say, it's entirely, I think, spent on the amount of Guinness that I'm drinking. There we are.
That's right. Yes, I think it's buy 500 pints, get one free.
Yeah, something like that.
That's how it is. Well, let's talk to Sarah and to Becky. Sarah, tell us about your business. You're in a comms business like our PR firm, but it's not quite the same.
Absolutely. But I specialise in financial public relations, investor relations. So predominantly my client base are listed companies, growth companies. Mainly on the AIM market, across all different sectors. So it's really about guiding them in their life as a kind of PLC in terms of the regulatory environment. I work closely with the brokers and the names on the clients and the senior management team, and also get involved in companies that are listing as well. So guiding them on their comms through pre-IPO, through the IPO, and then live as a PLC.
We'll drill down to that because it's very interesting about how we can get more investment in the north of England across the piece.
Absolutely.
By the way, Josh was talking about the budget. According to you, you're a quid a week or whatever better off.
No, £1.50 a year.
A year, right. Well, I had a slightly the opposite, but it wasn't direct budget consequences because Sarah's just talked about portfolios. I went online and looked at my private pension, of which 42% seems to be invested. I don't choose where it's invested. The investors, 42% invested in America and the rest in Britain. And I was like £8,000 a year worse off because the market had slumped. And there are people that have exited the stock market.
I mean, I think you know, AIM, we thought they were going to obviously take away the IHT relief, which they didn't completely, and AIM went up, I think it was 6% kind of on the day. I think we were quite relieved about that. So that's a good thing. But obviously that whole environment for these, you know, for companies that are listed and looking to list, you know, we need some
and individuals have sold stocks, haven't they, to avoid potential corporation tax, which absolutely. It did go up, but that just depressed the market.
Yeah.
Let's hear from Becky. What about the CBI? What's your role? What's the CBI doing in the north of England? You're in Yorkshire, aren't you?
Yep. So CBI obviously represents 150,000 businesses right across the country in every sector you can imagine. So from very large businesses right down to, you know, one person sort of startups and scale ups as such. From a North of England perspective, I head up all the activities in Yorkshire and the Humber. So a really big, varied patch, you know, really dynamic, lots and lots of sort of really exciting businesses based within it. But as you can imagine, it's the budget has been a challenge for them. Yes, they are sort of looking at what it really means for them and, you know, their investment plans in particular, how it might impact their sort of pay awards and really sort of coupled with obviously some of the employment bill that might come down the line as well, that sort of growing cost of doing business, I think has been really quite a challenge in that sense.
I was just saying, as comms professionals, it's really, this is interesting for us, these changes, because, you know, we're going to have to work quite closely obviously with our clients to navigate and how the story that they communicate, because that story is obviously will change.
Yeah, absolutely.
And any issues that they have as a result of the budget and
quite a few people want to sort of glaze over the hard stuff.
Yeah,
and you've got to be, particularly if it's a listed company, you must be transparent about the hard stuff.
Absolutely. And that transparency, really, that being honest and open to the market and how you're going to deal with those challenges.
Becky, what are businesses in Yorkshire and the Humber saying to you after that? Was people straight on the phone on Thursday morning asking what they're going to have to do?
Yeah, we actually did a snap survey as soon as Rachel Rees had finished speaking, and we shared the initial results with Treasury that afternoon. Now, that survey is now just closed. But as at 9 o'clock this morning, it was sort of 59% net negative in the sort of overall sentiment. And it will come as no surprise that the biggest reason for that sort of negative feeling was the, not just the NICS increase, but it's the lowering of the threshold which is actually having a more significant financial impact on businesses in the region. On the flip side of that, there was some positivity. I think the fact that there's going to be a corporate tax roadmap, which will give certainty about the tax landscape over the sort of duration of this parliament, was welcomed, because businesses are always telling me, I want certainty. You know, if I know what's happening, I can prepare for it. However, I think that was absolutely tempered with that sort of growing burden of on businesses, when businesses, you know, have rightly been recognised as the growth engines, you know, Labour sort of as accepted they want to do a growth mission, but they've chosen the slow way to go about that, and because it really is businesses who will deliver that growth for them.
I was talking to friends and colleagues and you as well, Joshua, in terms of how we were looking at our business. The fact is that the politicians and the brain boxes that put these budgets together think in very black and white terms and don't always predict the reaction. You've got to, like, play a game of chess. If you're going to put one tax there, there's a counter reaction somewhere else. And looking at our clients, those counter reactions fall into three different categories. The first is to make cuts. So that could be jobs, it could be suppliers. The second is to try and innovate. And the third is to try and sell more. And that's how I would you think that was right, Jobs?
Well, I think, Graham, what you've just described is how businesses always approach growing and trying to be more profitable. So I don't really see that it's any different. I think it's maybe just that people's minds are more focused as a result of it.
And there's going to have to be a dawning acceptance that this government does actually want a different type of state. It's perfectly entitled. It's been elected with a big majority. But it will have more of a proportion,
I think, on industrial strategy. Yeah. And I know that there's a big piece of work going on trying to develop that a little bit more at the moment.
And it also seems to want that more of the state the share of the state of the GDP of the country is higher than it was in previous 14 years. And, you know, as I say, they're entitled to, I don't agree with that personally, but they're entitled to do that. But business has to come to terms with it. Yeah. Becky?
I think business, you know, wants to be recognised as the driver of growth, and actually, because of the fiscal rules were changed to allow for more public investment in infrastructure, but the you're going to get the majority of the investment from the private sector, who will crowd in behind it. So in that sense, it's business wants to work in partnership with government rather than sort of it being sort of too weighted to one side or too weighted to the other in that regard.
Okay. So, Sarah, let's just ask you, and maybe you can pick up on this in a minute, Becky, without talking about the budget now, the appetite for investment, which is Becky's just been talking about. You quite regularly guide companies through floating on different stock markets.
Yeah.
And you promote them and help them to promote them themselves. Why would a company float on the stock exchange? It's quite cumbersome, isn't it?
Yeah. But, you know, what the listing gives them, not only credibility as being a listed business, but also it allows them to use the public markets to raise capital to fund growth. Either that's through sort of M&A or any investment they want to do to grow the company. So, you know, it's hugely important that these companies have this platform, you know, for growth, as we talked about. Yeah.
Now, let's talk about some examples of companies that you like to represent. You've had a company, it's based at Northeast, as it happens, which supplies convenience stores with their stock.
Yeah.
That company obviously needed to grow it's a logistics operation and so on. So it chose to launch on the stock exchange. Has it proved a success?
Absolutely. It was Kitwave Group. We listed them on kind of AIM in 2021. The business, it's been a huge success story. In fact, they won Growth Company of the Year a year ago. They're based in kind of the Northeast. And they've gone, they've got a bit of an M&A strategy, and they've gone to raise money to buy other kind of wholesale groups.
So, yeah, that is a good example of a company that's grit their teeth, took the plunge, got the cash, and grown as a result.
Yeah, absolutely.
But quite a lot of companies don't see it as a route to growth. There's an intimidating factor, the bureaucracy of it and the risk factor, and they sort of rule it out. Why do you think that is in the Northeast and Yorkshire and sometimes the Northwest?
Well, I think, you know, there's a cost to it as well, isn't there? You know, to list on an exchange, you know, there's all the advisors involved from the, you know, got to go through the whole due diligence process, which is, you know, could be a year long. I mean, there's an intense 3-month period before they kind of list. They've got the name of a broker, lawyers, accountants. You know, there's huge change that has to go through that business before it lists.
And
then there's a cost of being on the market, because then you've still got to retain advisors, those advisors. Yeah, that's a couple of £100,000 a year just to be a listed business. So those are
regulatory and cost hurdles.
And cost hurdles that some companies, you know, depending on their balance sheet, may not want to take on. They may feel it's better to stay private as a business.
When you're looking at the business landscape, you look at Becky's members. If you had a membership list of Becky's members in Yorkshire, I'm sure you would be able to see companies that would be advantaged by taking the plunge. What kind of criteria do you think a company would have to demonstrate to be even considered credible by the markets?
Well, obviously, it's that strength of the equity story, because once they're listed, they've obviously got to raise funds through the listing. So that investment case has got to be strong. That goes, you know, that's to do with the fundamentals of the business in terms of their financials, but also the strength of the management team as well. So, and actually drawing a listing, a lot of companies bring in people with perhaps listed experience or sector experience to bolster that board to make it more attractive to investors. And so I think it very much depends on the business and whether that public market is right for them.
And that goes to my last question about that, and that is which market? I met the chief executive of the London Stock Exchange at an Entrepreneurs Forum event a couple of months ago, and she was saying, actually, people, you know, you don't ask, you don't get.
Mm.
There is an appetite from investors in London, but people don't automatically think of doing it.
Yeah.
And then I met separately a person that runs a tech company. It built robots. And this company was saying if it floated, it would go to America, because his view was America was more of a technological and risk averse, less risk.
I think that was a big narrative last year. A lot of people snubbing London for New York and Amsterdam. Is that still really the case now?
I think there has been a move, I think, to some companies listing over on kind of NASDAQ, overseas exchanges, because they felt there was, as you said, tech, perhaps some pharma companies, depends on your kind of sector, that this is more receptive over, and then they get a better rating. But I still think this.
And you also think the AIM market is still credible, because there was a huge danger, wasn't there, in the budget of removing all the incentives, but they weren't all removed.
All removed, no. I mean, AIM has reduced, you know, when I started this business within the 2,000 companies on AIM, it's now, you know, 700. So there's been quite a lot of listings, but I'm hoping that, you know, that will, because I do think it's a great market.
And the comparative advance
for entrepreneurs and growing businesses.
I'm going to say an amateur thing now, because I'm not an investment specialist. Yeah. It's just an amateur observation that you see the Dow Jones and NASDAQ going up and up and up, and the London Stock Exchange with the FSE 100 just sort of being a bit more pedestrian. But those companies that are on it are older world companies, the extractive industries, oil, gas, mining, where maybe the new green and tech economy is more exciting to investors.
Possibly. I mean, there's a whole range of sectors on AIM. It's I've listed businesses from financial services to tech to, you know, across the whole range that have thrived on that.
Well, let's conclude our conversation just about the way in which interest rates impacted all of this.
Well, really, it was something I was thinking about picking up with Becky. Becky is a member of the Yorkshire Shadow Monetary Policy Committee that Recognition runs with Clive Owen. And you were one of the few people this week, Becky, I think it's been published today, so I can say this,
right.
who voted for a reduction in the base interest rate. I haven't read the piece in full. I know that's how you voted, so I wondered whether maybe you could have your reasons why.
I think it was 5-2. I think there was a couple who wanted them to stay the same as well. So I think for us is... the inflation has reduced quite significantly. Obviously, I think the last rate was 1.7%. And we really felt that we need to see that little bit of stimulus in the market. We need to give people a reason to actually sort of pick up their sort of spending. This is, for many businesses, this is a bit of a golden quarter. Mm-hmm. So especially in those businesses that are going to be hit by sort of increased costs, to actually sort of provide some impetus in them is quite interesting and important, but also in things like housing, to actually sort of make sure the sort of housing market continues to be stimulated as well. We sort of wanted to make sure we saw another cut. Mm-hmm. And we did. We do think that there will continue to be cuts, but possibly at a slower rate as sort of the impact of the budget sort of feeds through as well.
And not to put you two on the spot, too much on the spot, sorry, Sarah. Yeah. You know what I'm going to ask you now. If you were on the panel, how would you like to have voted?
Well, in terms of the...
In terms of where the shadow MPC, if you're on the Monetary Policy Committee, where would you be putting your vote? Would it
Reduction, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that because it's going to drive more people to be investing on?
Absolutely. Yeah. 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 Definitely. Yeah.
I went the opposite. I went to hold because I didn't think it was certain. I'd like to see what happens in America. Trump might be driving, if he wins, he might be driving rates down and we have to compete and then come down again. And if we held now, at least we'd have more flexibility. But anyway, it doesn't really matter because Becky's argument won the day on the shadow MPC. So there we are. Look, it's great to have you join us. And thank you. But we want you back, both of you, being great contributors. And if you want to join us as a guest on the Northern Business Podcast, do get in touch because we'd like to hear from you. And we might even be taking the podcast on the road in the next few months, maybe visiting your workplace and so on. Get in touch with us if you'd like that too. Thanks to our podcast producer, Harry Sinclair, and technical operator, Robin Campbell, also to Joss Haberkin. Join us next time on the Northern Business Podcast. Never miss an episode. Like, rate, and subscribe on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts.